Hello, everyone. I'm Viviana Young, the Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for Umpqua Watersheds through United Communities AmeriCorps, and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Molalla, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment, which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. Today we have with us a member of the Rare AmeriCorps program, Kate Benz. Kate, could you tell us what the Rare AmeriCorps program is and introduce what your project is?
Hi, yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me. For listeners who might be unfamiliar, AmeriCorps is essentially a domestic version of the Peace Corps. So AmeriCorps brings trained volunteers to different places across the US, and they essentially work to help out on humanitarian causes. So that can be anything related to poverty, education, the environment, and other sorts of topics, just generally things that have to do with the public good. And RARE is a small subset of AmeriCorps that operates with AmeriCorps funding, but it only operates within the state of Oregon. So the RARE program is a service work program that matches graduate level professionals with rural organizations to work on projects that will improve the community's way of life. And also, just as a side note, RARE actually stands for Resource Assistance for Rural Environments. I am a member of the RARE program, so I am one of the trained working professionals who's been matched with the community. So I bring my background and my experience to my community, and I got matched with the City of Roseburg as the partnering organization for my year of service. My background is that I have a degree in planning, public policy, and management, and that has to kind of do with sort of city planning. So I'm actually working within the City of Roseburg in their community development department, and my title is a long-range planning assistant. So the idea being with that title is that my projects focus around things that have long-term impact, as opposed to like day-to-day permitting and applications and things that the city would deal with, such as like new construction, things like that. So my projects are kind of out and looking into like a wider scope of the community. The city has professional planners and they juggle a lot of the current and long-range issues. So I'm mainly just here to create capacity for more work to be done. And one of the main projects that I have been working on and have recently completed is this online floodplain information map that is available on the city's website. So I created and designed that map, and that's kind of what we're here to talk about today, I think.
So how did you learn about AmeriCorps, and how did you get involved with your branch, RARE, specifically?
I had learned about AmeriCorps pretty early on. I had a friend in high school who, right after graduation, joined an AmeriCorps program, and he did one that kind of focused on a lot of on-site natural disaster relief work. But for me, as someone who went straight into college after high school, it wasn't something that I could immediately think of as an option for me. Just because service terms, as you know, they're usually between like 6 and 12 months long and they can get pretty involved. But I found RARE because it was billed as a service learning program for professionals who already had a bachelor's or master's degree. So this was something I could do right after I graduated school. And, you know, the idea that really drew me to it was that it was bringing professionals with skills and experiences to collaborate with rural Oregon communities specifically. And, you know, I'm a native Oregonian myself. I grew up in a rural farming area in the Willamette Valley. So I felt that there was a lot of similarity there as there is here with the Umpqua Valley.
And how did you personally get involved with the floodplain map project?
Yeah, so the city and my supervisor here at the Community Development Department, they had this project set aside for their potential RARE member. And thing is that it's actually a really great fit for me personally. I have a background in geography and mapping programs. And so I really had just the ability to take their idea of what they wanted and run with it without a lot of need for them to direct me and how to like technically get things done. So One thing is, I really don't have any prior knowledge of floodplains or floodplain management. So with that part of the project, that's an area where I took a lot of time to sort of research and understand things, so that way that I would be able to explain it better to others. Because a big part of this project is to kind of get across information in a way that's easily understandable for someone who might have no knowledge of the topic.
I really appreciate how you got involved with the community in this way, but I'm sure that aside from what you do to assist in this project, the city has to do something to manage the floodplain as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the city actually has quite a bit of involvement in sort of managing the floodplain. So what does managing the floodplain really mean? The city's involvement in floodplain management basically revolves around their zoning standards and overlays. So just like a broad explanation of this, the city sets standards for development based on zoning. So that includes kind of the way that you can build, what you can build, how you can use land. And then they have, you know, specific standards for different groups of things. So like there's standards for residential development, for commercial development, for industrial development. So imagine zoning as this layer that covers everything within the city limits. So on top of that regular zoning, the city has this thing called the floodplain overlay. And so the floodplain overlay is like a layer that goes on top of a regular zoning layer. And it basically extends across all of the areas of the city that have some sort of substantial flood risk. So anything within this floodplain overlay has a special set of development standards on top of the regular standards. And there's plenty of reasons for why that is that we can get into. But just in general, it's just to prevent or mitigate flood risk in those areas.
So you mentioned that there are special development standards for the floodplain. Has there always been specific standards, or has it changed over time?
Yeah, so floodplain development standards in themselves aren't particularly new, but at the same time, the city of Roseburg has been around for a very long time. Plenty of homes that were built really in the early years of Roseburg's incorporation. We're talking like early 20th century, late 19th century. Plenty of these buildings are built near the edge of the water or just like generally inside the floodplain, and you can't really avoid that now. So there's plenty of structures, existing structures in Roseburg that kind of been grandfathered into these newer sort of regulations, but newer construction has been regulated for decades now. If we're talking about when that was, nobody in the country had really a set standard practice for floodplain management until the late 1960s. So the federal government passed a bill back in, I think it was 1968 or 1969, that created the National Flood Insurance Program. And this program had established sort of one, a way to identify where flood hazard is, so mapping areas of high and low flood hazard and mapping, generally speaking, these broad maps of floodplains all over the country. And that program also incentivized communities to adopt development standards. So the city of Roseburg back during the 60s and 70s, late 60s, early 70s and 80s, this was the time when kind of floodplain development standards really became common and they were adopted into our municipal code.
Interesting. And from your perspective, why is floodplain management necessary?
It's a good question. So to me, the idea really focuses on prevention. So floodplain management, the purpose of it is a few things. The primary thing is to protect human life and especially vulnerable populations from natural disasters and just flooding in general. So vulnerable populations, meaning those who live near floodplains and maybe people who in the event of a disaster might not be able to get out in time when there is that imminent risk. So that is the primary focus of kind of just preventing people from either being in those areas in the first place or having structures and such built in such a way that there is less danger. Other main reasons is definitely just minimizing the cost of private property damage and also the cost of damage from public infrastructure. in the event of natural disasters such as flooding, and also minimize interruption to daily life and the interruption of, you know, businesses being able to operate. So there's a really big economic component to it, as well as sort of the safety, human health aspect. The other big thing about floodplain management that I think is important for people to understand is that, along with sort of our development standards, there's also this kind of understanding within our participation as being a national floodplain insurance program participating community, that there is a level of sort of education that comes with it as well. So ensuring that those who live inside a flood hazard zone know the risk and also have sort of a personal responsibility towards understanding those risks. So basically, also another big thing to think about is that by enforcing floodplain management practices, the community of Roseburg actually opens doors to receive better relief in an aftermath of a big flood event that might have been, you know, just unpreventable. Like, damage is never going to be 100% preventable. So FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they will only provide flood relief in floodplain areas if the community is in compliance and in good standing with their national flood insurance program. So we enforce our development regulations so that we can say that in the event that there was a big flood in the city, that FEMA will still come in and provide relief for us because we followed the regulations. The other thing that is pretty major to this project that I've been working on is that the enforcement of our floodplain code also opens the door for anyone in our community, even outside of the high hazard flood areas, to get flood insurance. So those within the floodplain and even outside of the floodplain, but within our city, everyone has the ability now to get federally backed flood insurance. And this is only available to communities who enforce development standards.
So can you share a little bit about how this connects to the MAP project that you've worked on?
Yeah, so the MAP, it takes information that the city has about the floodplain and it puts it in one easy, accessible place for people in the community to access. And this was part of it, that the big parts of it that are shown on the MAP, things that are kind of the focus, it shows the major flood areas, and it also provides copies of public records that the city has related to floodplain management. And among that are copies of elevation certificates and other documents that are important for obtaining flood insurance. So those are all accessible on the MAP. And overall, I think the way that it's presented now is a lot easier and more accessible for people to understand than what might have previously been available to them.
So who is the primary intended audience?
Yeah, the primary audience for this MAP is anyone living within the floodplain that's also within the city limits of Roseburg. That's the scope. And that can also not just include people who are currently living in the floodplain, but it could include anyone thinking about potentially buying a house located in the floodplain, anyone that deals with buying or selling property in the floodplain. And that could also include business properties, commercial properties. Local realtors and insurance agents might also have use for this, being sort of as a tool or resource. And that's just kind of the people that would be directly maybe affected by this MAP. But I also think that it is an interesting piece just to look at as anyone living in this community.
And how might people access this?
Yeah, so super easy. All you have to do is go to the city's website, and that is cityofroseburg.org. There is this bar at the top of the main page that has a quick links information category. So if you go to the quick links and you look down that, there will be a little thing that says floodplain information. And you click on that and it'll take you right to the map. You can also just look up floodplain on the search bar once you get to the city's website. And it's also accessible in the community development department's section of the website. So there's definitely a few ways you can find your way there. But the main thing is just go to cityofroseburg.org and you should be able to locate this pretty quickly.
And could you just summarize real quick why this map is so important?
Right. Yeah. Well, so one thing that's really great about it is that it's just a lot easier to understand, especially if you're an outsider to the community or you're someone with low knowledge about what the floodplain is, or you're potentially a new homeowner who really just has no idea what you might be getting into if you're looking at a house or a property in the floodplain. Previously on the website, there used to be this sort of long list of documents that wasn't easily searchable or explained. The goal here was to kind of make something that could be convenient and visually share a lot of information while also being a useful tool for people with questions about sort of what their insurance eligibility is or just general development standards that might apply to them that the city has.
And would you mind describing what elevation certificates are and how surveying ties into that?
Right, right. Yeah. So that is actually one of the main parts of the map, elevation certificates. So if you look at it, and I can't obviously show it, it's a little bit hard to describe visually, but on the map, you will see that at a specific address, there's an icon potentially. You click on it and it'll give you a link and it pops up a document. You might wonder, what is this document? So that's an elevation certificate, most likely. That is a public record that the city has because basically, in order to approve a house or just structure or new development in the floodplain zone, the city requires that. And that's a part of the floodplain overlay and the regulations. The certificate itself is actually something that is filled out by a surveyor or an engineer. And it basically just validates where the structure is located in relation to the elevation of the floodplain. So something that someone might need to understand is that the floodplain is not just like one layer or one elevation. The floodplain is actually a totally irregular space. So there's different risk associated with different portions of the floodplain. So it's not enough just to point at some big federal map provided by FEMA, because we do have those. And that is part of what you see on our floodplain map, is that you can see these federal zones that kind of just note broadly that this is an area within the floodplain. But a site-specific survey is really needed when assessing risk, just because there's a lot of factors that come into play as far as how likely your home is to get flooded. That can have a number of factors, just kind of thinking about things like placement of the home, like where is it in relation to water? Is it higher or lower? It's a lot of things that I don't necessarily understand, but an insurance agent or someone who kind of calculates risk of those things, they need that to kind of compare and apply a rate to. So basically, the long story short is that elevation certificate, it provides insurance agencies with the information needed to calculate your flood insurance rate. The other thing you might see on that map that's not an elevation certificate, but it's also kind of interesting, is some places on the map are maybe inadvertently included. And that's just because federal floodplain maps are essentially these broad generalizations. So they're sometimes incorrect. So a surveyor can come in to maybe your specific home site and determine if your building is actually sitting within the floodplain. And if it's not, then they can kind of request this thing called a letter of map amendment, which is another type of document. And that basically demonstrates that your home might be situated outside of the floodplain. So these are also other types of public records that are included here that can be searched for. And I should say that if you think that your home might be in the floodplain in the city of Roseburg, the easiest thing to do to go on there, if you don't have this information already, is just go into the search bar, type in your address, and you can find that. It'll pop up. And similar thing, if you have kind of an interest in finding out a potential property that you're interested in, same kind of thing. This map doesn't have all elevation certificates that are ever possibly done on it, but it does have a pretty good public record full of them. So yeah, I think that kind of sums that one up.
Of course, your research must have brought you across matters of flood insurance. Could you tell us a little bit more about flood insurance and how it connects to all of this?
Yeah, of course. The biggest thing, the most important thing to know is that flood insurance is not like regular homeowners insurance. A standard homeowner's policy does not cover flood damage, and flood insurance has to be bought separately in most cases. So there was a time before the National Flood Insurance Program was instituted where flood insurance might not have even been offered in your area just because of it not making any sort of financial sense for an insurance company to try to insure you, especially if you're in like a high risk area. So, you know, being located right next to a big river or in an area prone to hurricanes or something like that. Or, you know, you could have extremely exorbitantly high premiums. So nowadays, because we have this federally backed flood insurance program, it's a lot more easily obtainable to the normal person to get flood insurance. And so the elevation certificates and other documents featured on the city's map are doing exactly that. They're helping you to obtain flood insurance. And the bonus of that is also that because Roseburg is a participating community in this program, it opens anyone in the community up to get discounted insurance rates. So basically, how this all connects is that elevation certificates and other documents that are featured on this web map can be used by prospective homeowners or people whose properties, if they don't have the flood information or the elevation certificate already in their possession, potentially there's an older one on file that the city has. And so that can be accessed through there. So that's kind of where this all connects. So people who need to secure flood insurance, they can use the city's portal as a tool to locate potentially an old elevation certificate, existing one. And another perk that is kind of cool to mention is that because Roseburg is a participating community in the National Flood Insurance Program, and we also participate in something on top of that called the Community Rating System, which is essentially a program that if you exceed the federal standards, so have even a higher standard for floodplain development, you can actually get discounted insurance rates for your entire community. So I'm not sure what exactly that is here in Roseburg, but that is definitely something that can occur, is getting sort of a discounted federally backed flood insurance policy here in the city. And on top of that, one thing I did maybe want to kind of address is people might ask, why pay extra for flood insurance in the first place? Like, why should I have to pay more on top of, you know, whatever policies I already have, and just for the small possibility that there might be a flood, right? People don't really think about it, but my thought on that is that really at the end of the day, our preventative development standards here in Roseburg, they aren't going to just stop flood waters from rising and reaching people in the case of a, you know, major flooding event. So especially if you're in a high risk area of the floodplain, the clock is ticking. You know, if you're a homeowner, then it's something you need to think about in advance. And just based on FEMA's messaging and campaigns that I've seen through my research, there is kind of a lot of misunderstanding about floodplains, just maybe common thoughts or assumptions that might make people less likely to worry about it. So just in general, I would just warn people that definitely look into sort of flood risk and things like that if you are living in a more high risk prone area in the floodplain. That's just something that might benefit you in the long run.
Can you explain what you mean by a high risk area of the floodplain? And could you also, while you're at it, elaborate about what common misunderstandings or misinterpretations there are about the floodplain?
Oh, for sure. I guess the big thing that I kind of briefly touched on before is talking about how the floodplain is irregular. So there's different zones within the floodplain that kind of are broken down to equating the different risk levels. So most people think of the floodplain, they probably just think of what is most commonly known as the 100-year floodplain. That term is a little bit confusing, maybe a little bit misleading. So FEMA likes to call it the base floodplain. Basically, it's just an expression of probability. So areas that are fall under this 100-year floodplain. The reason why they're called that is because there is like a 1 in 100 annual chance that that elevation might be inundated, or, you know, that's just a fancy word of saying flooded, in chance of a flood event. So 1 in 100 chance, or as they like to say, like a 0.1% annual chance. And if you think about the math of that, you know, 1 in 100 chance over the course of 100 years, that just about equals like pretty much a very strong, close to 100% probability of it happening. So that's where that term like 100-year floodplain comes from. But if you think about that level of chance or risk, think about it in terms of like a 30-year mortgage, that equates to about like a 1 in 4 chance of there being flooding at that elevation. So probability doesn't equal the outcome in reality, but it can, you know, give a good indication, but it doesn't mean it's like the absolute. So when you think about, oh, the 100-year flood, well, that could happen multiple times in a relatively short period of time, or it could never happen in the course of 100 years. So that's kind of one of the major misunderstandings, I think, that might be thought about floodplains sort of, is this idea that this only happens once in 100 years. But based on these sort of like zones that are kind of statistically calculated, that doesn't actually ensure that it's only going to happen once in 100 years. And those zones, there's other zones kind of within the floodplain that are also based on a probability. So zooming out from the 100-year floodplain, there's also a part of our floodplain called the 500-year floodplain. And this may be also called the flood fringe. But basically, this is an area of a lower probability, so only about a 1 in 500 annual chance of flooding at that elevation. But that is still like a moderate level of risk compared to most other places that just generally aren't within a floodplain at all. So that is an area that's not super regulated by the city. As far as like construction or development goes, one of the only things that I can think of is that there's like a limit on building critical facilities within that area of the floodplain. That's something like an emergency station for fire or medical centers or police or something like that. So that is an area where like, if you have something that you absolutely should never have a risk of flooding, you definitely shouldn't build there, but that is not something that the city highly regulates. But those are kind of two of the general zones that people who live within the floodplain, you might not actually know like which part of the floodplain you live in. So that is something that could be really important to find out.
And now for some brief announcements. We at Umpqua Watersheds are excited to announce our upcoming banquet on April 10th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m., while we will not have an auction this year, we will enjoy food from our local sources, presentations from our committees highlighting our work, and a keynote speech by community dynamo Juliet Palencius. The banquet will be outside behind our building, and we will have awnings and heaters if necessary. Our outback stage will be covered, and we will have live music from 4 to 5 p.m. during happy hour. If you love to read and would like to discuss environmental topics with fellow bookworms, try Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club. Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club meets over Zoom every other month and will next meet on Saturday, March 26th. The book to be discussed will be Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret by Catherine Coleman Flowers. All sessions take place virtually at 5 p.m. on their date. For more information, please email Umpqua Watersheds Director of Education and Outreach, Ryan Kincaid. Her email is ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Or, if you'd like to share your environmental knowledge with the community by being interviewed for an episode of Living Downstream, email me at viviana@umpquawatersheds.org. That's viviana@umpquawatersheds.org. I've also heard the term floodway. Could you tell us what that is?
Right. Yeah, the floodway is actually the most regulated and in some ways riskiest area of the entire floodplain. So the floodway is what we call kind of that channel within the floodplain that's kind of closest to and surrounding the area where water will flow in the event of the flood. So you might think of like, oh, like the riverbanks of, you know, a major river or creek. It also can extend further than that. I'm not saying it's only limited there. There's a lot of places in Roseburg actually where there's things built within the floodway. And that can get complicated because in the case of any flooding or sort of elevated water levels, the water is going to rise there and it's going to flow through there. So there's actually going to be like a lot of force and movement of things in that area. And so if heavy rain or snowpack melt occurs, like it will be moving through that area. So that is definitely like an area of focus of, in our cup foods and things like that, where there is definitely a lot of caution around putting anything there.
So what sort of risk are we looking at here locally? How do flood zones relate to Roseburg and this community?
So regionally speaking, there's kind of an elevated level of risk from flooding just by nature of there being a lot of sort of bodies of water that have moving rivers running through. So we're talking about, you know, the North and South Umpqua rivers within the city limits, which is the scope of my project. That kind of just includes South Umpqua River and then also Deer Creek and Newton Creek. Those also have an amount of floodplain zones around those as well. So the city is kind of divided by these rivers. And so development definitely skirts into the floodplain and along the edge of the floodway all around. And it's at kind of these like urban level densities as well. So there's kind of this idea that isn't really thought about when you think about flood risk. Maybe you're thinking about it in an individual sense. You think about the risk to, you know, my house or to my business, right? But there's also this idea of community risk. So this idea of community risk is that if there is sort of a poor practice of floodplain management, that can increase just the overall risk of flooding for places that wouldn't even traditionally be considered part of the floodplain. So think about it kind of like a bathtub. This is how I think about it. Anytime you put something within the floodway, it's kind of like putting a rock into a bathtub. When you put an object into a place where water is supposed to flow, it displaces that water and it will cause the level of the water to rise. So if you put, you know, like a big structure within the floodway and that is there basically either blocking water from flowing or it's diverting water from flowing through its kind of natural pathway, that can cause new areas to receive that water because it has to go somewhere. So there's definitely this like cause and effect that can happen in flood zones because of how things are developed. So that's why this whole idea of floodplain management is so important to us.
You said that because of our position with the North and South Umpqua, we have more of an issue with flooding. Have we seen that in the past? What kind of major historical flooding events have happened?
Yeah, it's interesting. In my research, I got to learn a lot more about sort of the history of flooding in this region and area. I should say I'm not a native of Roseburg. I'm not from here. I'm actually from up higher in the Willamette Valley. So it was kind of interesting to get to learn a bit more about the local history here. It really helped me get a better context when kind of creating this project. So as far as like major flood events, I think a major one that people might remember happened, I think back in 1996. That was a recent one that was a little more notable. People might remember there was this heavy rain that happened in November that caused a lot of flooding, landslides, and sinkholes. It definitely made the news, definitely caused damages to certain roads and houses. So that one was definitely something that is a bit more recent. There's also, you know, just general sort of almost annual like flood events, maybe not super noticeable, but they're definitely prevalent. I think just this last January, 2022, it was definitely like a flood watch that was kind of fresh in my mind when I was thinking through a lot of the stuff in my project. As far as like what was the most major flooding event that's ever kind of happened in this area in recorded recent-ish history, that would probably go to the 1964 Christmas flood. This was one that I read a lot about because it just popped up anytime I searched anything about flooding in this area. People are still alive today who can definitely recount this better than I can. This was not just your every run-of-the-mill flooding event. This was definitely what people might think of as like the 100-year flood. So, you know, there was a lot, it was massive region-wide flooding and damage. What I read about it, there was, you know, homes that flooded, many major bridges were just washed out and destroyed. You know, people, there were casualties, people did pass away. There were definitely reported ecological effects as well. I read about how the Reedsports Fish Hatchery back then reported that flooding had allowed non-native smallmouth bass to enter the Umpqua watershed, which definitely went on to affect the local fish population. So there's kind of these things that you can read about, and it's maybe a little bit hard to understand if you weren't there what that impact actually looked like. One thing that was super interesting for me, an experience that kind of helped me put it into perspective, was if you drive along Roseburg along Highway 38 and going into Glide, west into Glide, there's this viewpoint at this area called the Colliding Rivers. So this is a place where two rivers meet. It's the Little River and then the North Umpqua River. And they have this little viewpoint up there that essentially looks over this confluence, and there are these interpretive signs. And I remember I went out there one time and I just happened to come across this interpretive sign, and I was reading it, and it said something along the lines of the 1964 flood would have reached 5 feet above this sign. And mind you, the viewpoint for this confluence was very elevated off of the riverbed. Like, it was not on like the bank of the river. It was definitely, you know, up on a crest, kind of up above where you would imagine like a bridge driving across over the river. And so that really just kind of blew my mind a bit, is thinking about like, this was really something that is kind of unimaginable to someone who wasn't there. It's unlike anything maybe that anyone had ever experienced that lives here currently. And so thinking about that level of impact on the community, I think there's definitely a need to remind people of things like that so that they can be prepared in the event of something like that happening.
That does sound like a massive shock to our community. How do you think that another massive flood in our lifetime could affect us now?
Yeah, it could be pretty catastrophic if people aren't prepared. And even if people have done preparations, I'm not sure if anyone could be truly ready for something of that magnitude. The population in this region has also grown a lot over 58 years. So there's just a level, even greater density of people in the area. So I'm not an expert, so I can't speak to if a flood of that magnitude will ever happen again in our lifetime. But, you know, the probability definitely isn't zero. And certainly floods of like a smaller magnitude, but still significant, could pose a risk to this community for sure.
What sorts of things would you like to research further? And what path do you think that your work might take?
Yeah, so this curiosity is definitely more of a personal curiosity rather than a future work path or connected to future research, because that's not necessarily something that I have in the cards for this project anymore. But I definitely have kind of these personal questions about maybe the future, the flood risk in this community, and how that might connect to sort of these broader changes that people have been observing in the climate. You know, there's that, you know, kind of broad scientific consensus that there are man-made shifts to the climate, but I think it's highly specific to different regions. So I'm kind of curious about what the long-term trend for this area is, and if it is going to trend more towards a drier climate with less flood risk, or maybe go towards more extreme climate patterns or weather events. That's just definitely not something that I have any sort of expertise in, but it's definitely, I think, an intriguing conversation maybe that could be had with people who do study that, and maybe how that also connects to the broader disaster mitigation and preparedness plans that are being created and updated in the region. And it is interesting because I think there are people out there already kind of looking at this. FEMA itself as an organization has put out sort of this public request to upgrade the National Flood Insurance Program. And one of the kind of focuses of that in the past has been to kind of think about how to anticipate flooding increases over time due to the effects of climate change. And that might necessarily focus on different communities, maybe not here in Roseburg, but maybe, you know, out in areas like Texas or Florida, or, you know, these areas in the coast and places like that. But I just think I'm very interested in sort of just looking to what else can be done, and also what other risks might impact this community, and what can be done from a public perspective to mitigate risk of like other types of climate events or just natural disasters in general.
And on a bit of a fun note, may I ask, what was your favorite part of doing this project?
Yeah, no, it's funny you ask that, just because for me, weirdly enough, I get to kind of activate some of my creative brain when I do projects like this. I have a personal, really kind of strong interest in cartography and map making and designing. So when I had time to sit down and actually imagine and think about how do I want this to be designed, that was kind of fun for me. I got to think about what is the easiest way to communicate, what zone is higher or lower risk, and how do you use colors and definitions and sidebars and things like that to sort of show that. So a lot of care really went into kind of my little product. I mean, it's definitely not like an award-winning map or anything, but I'm pretty proud of it. So yeah, I would just say I'm really excited also in my position here at the City of Roseburg to continue to work on projects similar to this. I have a few other sort of mapping related projects on my work plan that will definitely be coming up and put out on the city's website. So yeah, that's really all I can say as far as details for that right now. But it is something I just really have been enjoying, which is sort of the collaborating with the community organization here, which is the city, to kind of work on something that definitely sort of deals with my own personal interests. So I think it was just a really great match. Another part of this project that's been really fun is sort of this community outreach aspect of it. So I've been kind of just on a little miniature campaign of sharing about this on different platforms. So first, of course, your wonderful program here. This is one of the first things that has kind of been a place for me to kind of share about this. And then also going on to the Planning Commission to give a short presentation, and then also presenting this product or this portal to the City Council as well. And it's just been really interesting to try to figure out how to kind of break it down in a way that's easier for people to kind of understand.
How did you discover your love for geography and complex projects like map making?
So my major in college required an introductory class on geographic information systems. And before that point, I really had no idea that was even a significant field of study, or that there was really a very large industry behind it, but there really is. And that really becomes immediately obvious when you think about how everything that people do these days, navigation-wise, comes from GPS. But it also became very apparent to me through schoolwork and through this job here, how relevant it is for someone working in city or regional planning to have a geographic information system background. Everything that humans build has to be mapped out, you know? So you think about like roads or pipes or power lines, someone's keeping a record of those things, where they are. And so my first exposure to sort of map making in that class that I took came from more of this like civic perspective that deals with sort of these man-made structures and human statistics. And the technologies that people can use to make maps these days can actually do so much more than just make a visual map. So that was something that really kind of hooked me in. You know, there's a lot that you can use a tool for to conduct like a spatial analysis of something. So that's what really kind of got me really interested, sort of this combination of cartography, which can be, you know, something as like creative, a design project. You think about all these really beautiful and elaborate
maps. I've made plenty of those, but it can also just be used, you know, making a very simple scene, you know, where you're looking at a single place in space. You can use the technology to understand something about it. And that's kind of what's really interesting about this project. And this kind of links to my greater interest in geography and GIS, is sort of seeing this interplay between human built environment and the natural environment. It's just interesting. You know, you can just like look at a floodplain map for a single second and very quickly gain some sort of understanding about how people, humans, interact with nature and how humans anticipate some kind of adverse natural event and how we prepare in reaction to that. So I hope that kind of captures a bit about why I like it so much. And it's just because the ability to bring that kind of understanding or insight about something and then also communicate it outwards to other people and have it not only be something that you're showing, but having it being an interaction through like a tool where someone can get information that's relevant to them. It's a really great way to put out information, basically.
So what would you say was the most challenging part of your project, and were there any significant bumps in the road?
So yeah, I think there were a few different challenges. The first challenge, I would say, is everything that came with dealing with a bunch of old records. Elevation certificates and letter of map amendments are, you know, they can be generally pretty old files, you know, up to 30 or 40 years old, maybe a few decades at this point. So I definitely ran into plenty of issues just trying to read a bunch of old files, especially where like the scan quality was bad or the metadata or labels associated with it were inaccurate. So it was really time consuming to have to comb through a bunch of old records and make sure that they could all be correctly entered into a spreadsheet first and then into the map server correctly. So I learned really quickly that, you know, records keeping is tedious, it's expensive, but it is super necessary. A proper records keeping is for an organization like a city government, because everyday people rely on that information that is housed by public providers. So, and that's true for all types of application and not just floodplain regulation. And I would say another thing that was really challenging about it, this is more for me personally, rather than just about the project itself. But for me, it was catching up on everything that's kind of necessary to know about this topic. So I don't think too many people go about their regular lives thinking about flood zones or insurance. And especially for me, as someone who isn't a homeowner yet, it's just not something you really think about. So there's tons of technical terms and federal guidelines and programs that I really had to sit down and read up upon. And it kind of made me feel like someone who maybe a first-time homeowner would be going into it, not knowing anything and having to kind of just figure it out on your own. So, and it's not immediately easy to understand from primary sources on FEMA's website. So that it involves a lot of secondary research and trying to find out how other people explain these things. And so that was a big part of this project for me, was trying to go research and find out how other cities and other nonprofit organizations try to communicate to people. Also, you know, taking a page out of FEMA's book, maybe trying to look at their actual sort of outreach and how they word things and borrowing the language from different places. Because the number one thing I wanted to do beyond making something that's an easy tool that's convenient is making sure that the information and the content of the tool and what it's trying to share with someone is actually easy to understand. So not just making it so that you can easily find an elevation certificate, but so that you can actually understand what the elevation certificate means and what it says and how do you decode this. I couldn't possibly cover everything there is to know about it, but if you go to the city's website and you look at the map, you'll see there's like a sidebar that kind of starts to go through and explain through what I thought were all maybe the relevant terms. So things on there, like what is a letter of map revision based on fill, which to me, it just sounds like a jumble of word salad, but it's a term used in some of the documents. So it's things like that that I want to provide just like a little bit of context for, you know, like a starting point so that, you know, if people have more questions and things that they can figure it out more on their own after that. But the most important takeaway I got from all of that is just that it's really important to try to demystify technical terms so that everyone in your entire audience can at least initially access the information and find that to be usable. But it's also still super important to make sure that everything that you say, even if it's simplified, is accurate down to the core, because the last thing you want to do is spread misinformation on a topic where there's, you know, a lot of money or monetary value, possessions, you know, life and safety risks even at stake. So everything about that just needs to be very carefully dealt with when you're communicating.
And as we're finishing up, do you have any guidance for where people might find resources on this topic? So, for example, where could people go to find information about the floodplains and management?
Yeah, of course, the biggest thing, which I've already, you know, maybe plugged a few too many times, is the city's website. Our floodplain information page probably has the most locally relevant information for someone who lives in this community. But if you have broader questions about what can be done in the face of a flood, potentially like, what should I do to be prepared? FEMA's website is definitely a good place to look. So just, you know, you can go search them up. But yeah, I think those would be my two main recommendations. But also, if you live outside of the city limits, but within this county, Douglas County, Douglas County also has their own floodplain information webpage that is connected to their website. So I definitely recommend looking up Douglas County's information on this as well, because the guidance might be similar, but maybe more tailored to those who live outside city limits.
And before we finish up, is there anything else that you would like to say?
I really don't have anything else to say. I would love to say thank you for having me here on your program. I think it was super fitting to be able to talk about, you know, rivers and kind of everything that goes on downstream on a program, you know, it's called Living Downstream. So thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much as well. It's great to hear from another AmeriCorps member from a sister branch. Yeah, and definitely. I really appreciate what you do for the community and for everyone in general.
Sick. I appreciate the same from you.
I wouldn't have even, you know, thought that this was a need in our community if it wasn't for you and what you bring educationally and resource-wise. So thank you for opening my eyes to this need in the community, and you had so many great points. So again, just thank you for appearing on Living Downstream.
Yeah, absolutely.